Been a lot of news this week out of our nation's capital. The Supreme Court handed down two key decisions. President Obama says he's going to forge it ahead alone on immigration reform. And the troubled Veterans Administration gets a new leader. Democrat Jim McDermott represents Washington State's 7th Congressional District. That includes the city of Seattle. He joins us today to talk about what's been happening in that other Washington. Thank you for coming in.
It's good to be here.
Let's just dive right in. The Supreme Court ruled Monday that some for-profit employers with religious objections can opt out of providing contraceptive coverage under the Affordable Care Act. You've been a big supporter of the ACA. What do you think of that decision?
Well, it's absolutely predictable in the sense that this court can't possibly make a judgment that's good for all the people of America. They started with Citizens United. And once they did that, once they made corporations into individuals, well, then an individual's running a company and he can make whatever decision he wants about his employees. I think that's absolutely wrong. Everybody in this country ought to have access to affordable health care as they need it.
Will that exception that the Supreme Court made on Monday undermine the foundations, the very tenuous foundations of the ACA? In other words, is it the first step towards overturning it?
Well, that remains to be seen. People are using the courts as a way of trying to destroy the government, the Tea Party people in the right wing, and they get court decisions which then undermine, and then they go and get another court decision and they keep undermining. And I would not be surprised by anything.
You're talking about so-called activist judges. The Democrats are accused of doing the same thing by the Republicans.
Well, if you look at the activity of the courts since Reagan got in to be president, it's very hard to say that the Democrats have been using the courts very effectively. We keep losing battles, labor law and poverty law and homeless, and you just go right down the list.
Well, you mentioned labor law. The other decision that came out on Monday was about home health care workers in Illinois not being required to pay union dues, even if they do benefit from a union contract. In Washington state, we have 44,000 home health care workers that work for the state, Department of Social and Health Services. So they may be impacted. We haven't heard yet. But I'm curious for your opinion on how that might affect the organized labor movement in general.
Well, there clearly has for the last, as long as I've been in politics, 30 years, there have been people who've been trying to push the labor movement backward. And we've gone from 30% organized in this state down to around 11%. They are really trying to break the labor movement totally. This is just another chipping away, one piece at a time. These home health care workers will be making minimum wage pretty quickly if we're not careful.
While we talk about organized labor, one of our biggest pools of organized labor in this state are the Boeing machinists who recently, some felt, were forced to take a contract that they didn't like from the company because there's that politics of the right to work states versus states like Washington that do recognize the rights of unionized workers. So stepping back from a national perspective, what role does Congress play in overseeing the different states and their approaches to organization of labor?
Well, Congress has been very, very flaccid, I guess would be the best word. They're asleep while this is going on and the courts are making these decisions. The right to organize is getting harder and harder everywhere. And again, that is an organized effort by the right to break the power of labor. It started with Walker in Wisconsin. I mean, he went right straight at the state employees. And that's happening all over the country. And I think that we are in a very difficult time because if people can't fight for their rights collectively, then they're reduced to doing it individually and you never win.
I'm talking with Jim McDermott. He represents Washington State's 7th Congressional District, and that includes the city of Seattle, where he and I sit today. This week, the president announced that he was going to take executive action on immigration reform. And essentially, he said it's because Speaker John Boehner told him that he wasn't going to move any kind of immigration reform bill forward, despite the fact that one's been sitting in the House for quite some time. Am I right?
Marcy, if John Boehner would put the Senate bill on the calendar, it would pass with 200 Democrats and 40 or 50 Republicans tomorrow. It is a bill that there is agreement by the majority, but a very small group of minority members, primarily Tea Party people, are telling the speaker, you do that, you're done. So he has taken that route and folded to them.
A couple of, probably more than a couple of months ago, I spoke with you by phone, and you talked about a petition that representatives could sign, that if enough of your membership signed that, you could supersede whatever the Speaker of the House had in mind. Does that still exist? Are representatives signing on?
There is already something called a discharge petition, and you're discharging it from the control of the Rules Committee. And the Democrats have all signed, but you can't get Republicans to do that because if they do that, then they are afraid that they'll have the right wing of their party come after them in the election, and they don't want that. So they're afraid to put their name on the piece of paper because if it was going to pass, they might put their name, but they're not sure it's going to pass. So everybody's saying, you go first and I'll follow you. Well, on the Republican side, nobody's going first.
There's not one Republican who thinks that they have the guts to do that?
As far as I know, at this point, there's not a single Republican name on that list.
And all the Democrats have signed it?
Almost all, yeah.
We have not a lot of time and so many things to talk about. The president was busy this week. He nominated a new head for the Department of Veterans Affairs. The VA, the person who has been nominated, by the way, is Procter & Gamble exec Robert McDonald. The VA most recently has been under fire for inadequate health care. I know that Democrats have put forth a proposal that would increase the number of doctors and caregivers that are provided. Republicans, I assume, also want to provide good care for veterans. Will this nominee, Robert McDonald, be able to improve things?
That's a real question. Running a big corporation is one thing. You're dealing with bottles of hairspray and oil for bodies and all kinds of stuff. Whether dealing with the problems of the Veterans Administration is going to be bendable by this man is a real question. I hope he succeeds. You can get good care in a veterans hospital. I know the quality of care. I've been looking at it in this city for as long as I've been here. The problem is getting through the system and into the care area.
So it's not the care itself. It's actually making the system
accessible.
Yeah, accessible. So that's it. I had heard at least one report on NPR about the computer system that a lot of the VA centers use being like so antiquated that it's barely more than word processing.
Well, there is this VA and other VAs are using a healthcare information system that they developed themselves. And one of the real problems with it is that it doesn't link up with the Department of Defense because the Department of Defense was done by a private contractor who gets paid for it, and they have never found a way to link it. So if you go into a doctor's office up in the VA, you'll see him with two screens. One with DOD on one screen and the other with veterans on the other screen. So there are all kinds of problems because we have not standardized the information technology.
Do we have the money to upgrade the VA's own system?
Yes. Do we have it? People will say, no, of course, we have no money. Look at all the debt.
Right.
This is not an issue where you decide, do you have the money? This is, we should do it.
I'm with Jim McDermott. He represents the 7th Congressional District here in Washington State. And while we're on the subject of military, Iraq, the president recently announced that he was going to send 300 military advisors there and about 200 troops to provide security. And this is to help the Iraqi government in its fight against the insurgent group ISIS, which I heard yesterday changed its name to something else. But should the president have sent those Americans back to Iraq?
No. The president has to make a decision. On the one hand, he said, we want to get rid of Maliki. Well, if you want to get rid of somebody, you don't send in soldiers to support him. You don't give him Apache helicopters. You don't arm him. What we're playing, it's a very confusing game to me, which way we think we're going. And ISIS is, they're trying to put together a caliphate for all Muslims in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. They've made the first mistake I've seen them make by saying they want Sunnis and Shias to join in and we'll have one great happy Muslim nation. That's not going to happen, and they're going to get some blowback from people who are unwilling to accept them.
So if we shouldn't have sent any advisors or troops in, what role, if any, do you think the U.S. should play?
I think there is a time to admit that you have to let somebody else solve their problem. I mean, every parent has had that experience with their own kids where they, you know, they see what their kid is doing. They try and help them and give them ideas and give them all kinds of support. But at some point, you have to let your kid make his own or her own decisions and live with it. And I really think that we are at that point, because if we get in there, I mean, I'm old enough to remember Vietnam. John Kennedy sent a bunch of advisors to Vietnam, and suddenly we got a wall with 58,000 people's names on it who died in. I don't want that to happen in the Middle East.
Closer to home, and something that affects us financially, the Export-Import Bank, the Ex-Im Bank, is up for reauthorization. You recently made some public statements in support of that reauthorization. Why is the Ex-Im Bank so important for Washington?
When somebody in the state of Washington wants to make a sale overseas, they make a contract with somebody far away in Kenya or Uganda or Singapore, and they send the goods over there believing that the money will come back by the return mail. If it doesn't, they need the backup of the Ex-Im Bank. So they buy insurance from the Ex-Im Bank for the cost of that sale. And people always say it's only a Boeing bank. No, it isn't. I went up to a company here in Seattle that has $1.4 million in sales over here in Magnolia, and they are selling abroad, and they need the bank too.
How likely is it that the bank will be reauthorized?
Absolutely, 100%. The Republicans, this is another one of those times when John Boehner, if he would bring the bill out and lay it on the table, there'd be 200 Democrats there and 40 or 50 or 60 Republicans. Only the crazies in the Tea Party think that there should not be an Ex-Im Bank. Every country in the world has an Ex-Im Bank to support their exports.
And finally, while we're talking about Congress again, President Johnson, 50 years ago today, signed the Civil Rights Act into law. It had strong bipartisan support. Could the Congress that you sit in today come together on something like this?
I wish I could say yes. I think at this point it would be very unlikely that we could make a step forward like was made with the Civil Rights Act of 1964.
Democrat Jim McDermott represents Washington State's 7th Congressional District, and after listening to you talk, I got to wonder briefly, why keep this job?
Well, I'm hopeful because I know the people have the power, and they will ultimately bring about the change. Look what happened in SeaTac. The people raise the minimum wage in a little teeny town down here south of Seattle. That's when the people take hold. They're going to do the same thing in the election with gun control in Seattle. They're going to say, we want background checks on everything.
Congressman, thank you so much for coming in to talk with us today.
We'll see you again.
It's The Record on KUOW. I'm Marcy Silman.